It's time for the Access of Easy podcast, the weekly technology digest that keeps you ahead of the curve. Brought to you by EasyDNS.com.
Welcome back, everybody, to Access of Easy. This is number 313, the audio sidekick to your favorite newsletter on tech security, data breach, and overreach. And you can sign up over at accessofeasy.com. Mark and the team will give you a little bit of a discount on your next buy, I think, your next buy or your next renewal or something if you sign up for the newsletter, which is great. And then you can read all the stories. We do the headliners. And then there's obviously a few other ones you can check out on the newsletter as well. So my name is Joey, as always, here with my co-host Len. Buddy, what's going on over there?
Same old, same old. I'm freezing. I don't know if it was the same over there, but it's been chilly. And I had to bust out the sweater, which is a sad time, especially since it's still August, but whatever. Everything's good. How about you, Joey?
No complaints. I will note that I'm in a new dig area today. My wife and I moved a little while ago. So this is a new setup. And Len pointed out before the show, you can see behind me a Bitcoin price chart with liquidation levels going down the right side. Actually, Len, I forgot to tell you, the volume is down over there. But if you leave the volume up, it makes like a... I don't know what the noise would be. It's like, ow, ow, every time someone loses their shirt on a price move. So it's not a bad little service there for free 99. I might run that next time we do CBP. I got to figure something out because I'll probably use the same setup on Monday for the first episode back from my move. Anyway, let's get into the quote of the week here. Last week's quote we'll start with. A government that robs Peter to pay Paul can always depend on the support of Paul. That was from George Bernard Shaw. No one got that. This week's quote. Wisdom, compassion, and courage are the three universally recognized moral qualities of men by, that's where you come in, listener, viewer, reader. No searching up the answer. Post it in the comments, and then you get a next domain or hosting renewal on EasyDNS, which is great. So, Len, we got a handful of stories today. I'm afraid there might be a duplicate here.
With creative thinking and doing stuff on the fly, we can get around that because number one is the Internet of Things, IoT devices, and they are now under attack. And so there's this new malware that has evolved with this malware has a name, KMSDBot. That's almost a zero. That's pretty darn low. If I could even go negative, I think I probably would. It's a bad, bad name. I don't know what it stands for. It doesn't roll off the tongue. It looks awful when you type it out and when you're reading it. So it's in all respects, it's just a bad name. Zero.
You're rating the names now on the aesthetic of the typed name.
Everything has to be rated. You got to run the gambit when you do that. You just can't do one thing. You got to be consistent and have a wide variety of things you're ranking it against. And yeah, noted, all of them noted. just to fail. Are you giving it lower than higher than zero? So I'll give it lower than zero if it's possible. Bad names.
If you're only listening, you can see me and Len trading glances here, deciding what to give this thing. I think it's a zero.
That's a zero. Yeah, and if it could go lower than zero, I'll do that. So the lowest number possible. Anyways, KMSDBot. This thing has been evolving, and so these Internet of Things, the IoT devices, really they're low hanging fruit for a lot of hackers out there. And the KMSD bot malware, well, it's been beefed up since its evolution, and it's now stealing passwords and banking information as a result. And normally, this malware is a type that typically would target Windows computers, but it's branching out into other things. Just like many other people out there, they're expanding their horizons, and it's maybe they're doing some side jobs. And it looks like this is doing the same thing, and it's targeting other OSs. It's trying to steal personal information. And like I mentioned, passwords, banking information. And what it does, it installs and it tries to install on the victim's IoT's devices. And how does it do that? Well, the malware is designed to scan random IP addresses for open SSH ports. So any network administrator out there, they would have hopefully closed this or at least limited it to certain users on their network. And those users would have a fairly difficult username and an extremely difficult password. So a brute force attack just doesn't work because that's what this is trying to do. Once it finds an open SSH port, it does a brute force attack to try to get in. But not only is SSH being scanned, also Telnet Telnet, man, that's the like the SMS version of communications. It's unsecure, it's limited in its features, it's old, and it should be mothballed. I guess there's some usability case uses for it, but really, if you have Telnet, close that thing off because it's just a security hole that needs to be shut. But anyways, like I mentioned, these IoT devices, they're attractive devices to be attacked by hackers. And a lot of them, considering there's a lot of cheap items out there that people are buying, knockoffs, and those are probably the ones that it is attacking most. But even the ones that are real McCoy could be something that could be attacked. And remember, these things, they have speakers, some have cameras. There's a lot of different items they have on there, and it could get information readily available, not just something that you type in or you scan a network, but also something you say or something you do in front of it. So this could be really nasty stuff. I would recommend anybody that has these devices reconsider keeping them, or at least limiting where you have them, and put them in a, maybe in a corner in the house that gets very little attention and very little traffic, because these things could be nasty if it's attacked by some sort of malware.
How many IoT devices do you have? I can't imagine you have many, because like I know in our house, the new house that we're in here, even talking to my wife about getting a Nest thermostat, which is like a commonly seen IoT device, fridges, dishwashers, washing machines and dryers now, even something like a Sonos, which we have. There's just tons of them. And to your point, you know, I think that a lot of people, and you and I are pretty careful about this stuff, obviously, because we spend a lot of time doing this show and thinking about these things and digital security. I think a lot of people buy these things mindlessly because they're just so convenient, Len. And so I'm curious, you know, a guy like you who's very conscious of things like FOSS and being able to review products in a way that maybe the average consumer doesn't want to review them in a time where almost everything you buy has this connectivity. Are you a guy that has a lot of these things around or no?
No, I have some that in the next room, they're unplugged and they're just sitting there. And I've been meaning to sell it for some time, but I haven't gotten around to doing it. So yeah, not really. I'm not a big proponent of using it. Like a lot of people use their phones. They just talk to it and say, hey, Siri, or okay, Google, or whatever, to do something. Like mine doesn't have that functionality. It's not listening to me. So similarly, like I don't use my phone in that regard as well. So, but you know, everybody could do what they want. This is their baby to deal with, their life. And well, if they're willing to give up some of this information, that so be it. But remember too, some of these products out there, they're not well built, they're not well made. And if there's a way for malware to attack it, oh man, anything you say can be used against you. In fact, there was a court case. I'm going into the weeds here. And I think it was in Virginia that the judge was asking Amazon to provide
the Alexa data. Yeah.
Yeah, it was in a murder case, if I recall correctly.
That's so right. That's right.
If it's, you know, if it's being recorded somewhere, it's stored, it could be used against you. There could be a subpoena against the information or like a court request for it. You never know. Terrible stuff, but anyways.
The craziest thing too is like if you look at thinking about some products that have, you know, microphone capabilities, but maybe didn't have IoT capabilities when they first came out. Sonos is a great example. We have a Sonos, geez, what do you call it? A Sonos One. It's like the tiny little, not tiny, it's like a box speaker. It's great sound quality for the price and works really well with a lot of the apps that my wife and I use for parties, entertaining, things like that. There was an update pushed, I think a year and a half ago, 2 years ago. You could look this up, listener, reader, viewer, where they basically demanded that you enable voice rec for Amazon Alexa. But as everyone knows, you can say, hey, Alexa, or Alexa, do this anytime. And so the thing is always running. And I had a decision to make at that time. You know, what am I supposed to do with this now? Do I get the update or do I just keep playing with this older, basically, firmware? And we decided to stay on the older firmware because I just don't want that thing listening to me all the time. It's just not, it's not reasonable for one. It's not what I paid for two, which, you know, more people should be upset about, I think. And number three, you know, if you think about the stories we've covered, even in the last 2 weeks, Len, you know, Zoom, for example, great, great example of this, data mining your voice for AI learning, right? For language models or for whatever. These companies are all going to be doing this. It's a revenue stream that's just starting to kind of take shape here. Why would they not do it? If they have the data, they have your voice info, they're going to do it. Of course they are. Don't give it to them. Avoid this stuff. IoT is man, something that really people need to be aware of at the very least and avoid if they can.
Sometimes less is more.
And yeah.
This is a case where it certainly is.
For sure. 100%.
And let's talk about the UN. This is interesting because this is a story that comes up. Well, not a story, but the topic that seems to be coming up more and more. The UN. Anyways, there's going to be some sort of surveillance pact that's causing some concerns up there. It's a a draft from the United Nations Cybercrime Treaty is being negotiated right now in New York this week, but human rights and digital privacy advocates are warning that the proposal could become an expansive global surveillance pack. And of course, this would trample on data privacy and human rights. And the treaty, which has been under negotiation for about 2 years, aims to define what online crime actually is and how member states can better work together to curb the growing global problem. However, there is concern about many governments and civil rights advocates that the treaty, and well, let's look at the origin of this. It was originally proposed by Russia. So take that for what it's worth. And this has support from some countries like China, North Korea, Iran, Venezuela, Nicaragua. Well, they don't have let's just look at the body of work that they have. Anyways, this treaty, it's going to pave the way for regimes to legalize surveillance across borders and criminalize online speech. And it's going to authorize police to help foreign governments investigate activities that may not be a punishable offense in their own country. It will require governments to collect and store data about their citizens' online activity, even if the data is not related to any suspected crime. And it'll make it easier for governments to block websites and censor content. And obviously, people are saying that these provisions are going to violate the rights of and privacy of people and their ability to express their freedom and or freedom of expression. And this thing, it's going to weigh to silence a lot of people out there, critics and other people that are trying to talk badly against their own government. So, this is something I hope that it just falls by the wayside. And looking at this story and the number of stories we had in last week about the UN, it seems like the UN is, well, it's past its best before date. And that's it. Like, all it's doing now is just providing us with more and more headaches. And why Russia? Why Russia and all these countries out there? And there's no way to stop this thing. Like, we don't need more of this. We need less of this. And, well, whatever. Some things we just don't have any say. We're just a pawn in this game. And somebody's moving to pieces and we just go where they tell us to go. And it's too bad because we're going to be subjected to a lot more surveillance as a result of all this. And if there's anything to do to stop it, I'd like to do it.
It's so important to have, this is a conversation I think like that we could tie back to CBDCs, could tie back to IoT, could tie back to, even home ownership. Anytime that you have to be considerate of what you're saying so as not to upset the current regime, not any regime, the current regime, you're in a position that you've become vulnerable in a way that you can't live like that. You know, it's something that's going to weigh on you, cause you mental health problems, cause you difficulty sleeping, cause you all manner of health issues and difficulty with your family and difficulty with your friends and your employer, all these things. This is no way for people to live. And so I think, you know, you and I know this pretty well. I think we both view Bitcoin as a way to kind of be outside the system when it comes to finances. Outside money, as Arthur Hayes from BitMEX likes to call it. I think that's a great term. What is the way to be outside communication? Is it stuff like Signal and Telegram? Is it stuff like, Rumble and other video providers? I'm having a hard time figuring this out because as you go up the stack, there's always, you know, the ISPs who can censor you, mobile providers who can censor you, app stores who can censor you. We've kind of like, you know, walked into the cage here and gone further into the jail with doors closing behind us over and over again. And it seems to me like you're getting close to a point where it's too late for some of this stuff when it comes to communications. Because, I mean, you and me, if we were going to make a bet here, I'm not a gambler. I don't think you are either, but would you bet that Signal and Telegram, for example, are available on the Apple App Store 10 years from now? If you had to guess, you know, like where would you come down? I think I would come down on they're probably not going to be available in 10 years because now it's those countries you mentioned talking about quote unquote disinformation or whatever and other nonsense over the UN, cybercrime and all this, right? But I think soon you're going to start to see modern Western democracies show their colors in a way they've not shown them yet on the international stage. And I imagine that the App Store and Google and all these different providers will have a role to play in that. And so I you know, I'm not sure. I'm not sure there's a way out of this. I think that we need to really start thinking about this at a like at scale, because it's one thing to have like, you know, I've talked about mesh networks, for example, where you can share information and whatnot with people with barely any way to pick that stuff off from a provider ISP standpoint. But, you know, when you're talking about stuff like quote unquote cybercrime, the clamps are going to come down. And so how long until Signal and Telegram are you know, gone from the App Store? You and me will be doing this show in 3 years or 5 years or whatever. And the story will be that there's a child trafficking ring on Telegram. And so Apple pulled it from the App Store. Signal, same thing.
I can see it's only a matter of time. Yeah, I can see them doing it because they have the ability to do it. Obviously, they've done it before. And if they deem the product to be against their
they've done
business.
It over less. Think about what was that Twitter? Gab, right? They pulled Gab because that guy wouldn't police quote-unquote hate speech. Torba, whoever the CEO is over there, wouldn't police hate speech. That was a few years ago. And Google did the same thing. They pulled the Gab app from the Play Store. And so, you know, for a lot less, with a lot less on the line as well, they'll yank an app. And I think if you start to get pressure from governments, man, I again, like you and me view this through the Bitcoin lens, I think a lot too. Look at the way that communications have changed, even just from the point of view of the Federal Reserve, where they used to be able to tell you inflation was 2% or 3%. Now everyone knows. You can go on Shadow Stats, talk about it with your friends, talk about it with your family. How long until these other apps, Twitter included or X included, you can't talk about this stuff anymore. It's a crime to stoke inflationary fears. It's a crime to do these things. Like it's not the problem. The big problem I have is that it's not out of the realm of possibility. And I find myself saying that more and more often. And unfortunately, over the last 5 years, man, I think directionally, it's undeniable which way we're heading. It's scary stuff, dude. Scary stuff.
You know, Telegram, it doesn't encrypt end to end when you're doing group chats, right?
Yes.
It's only end to end when you're just doing one to one. So it's really not the best program to use, client to use, if you're trying to cover your tracks. And Signal, too, is because it's tied to a telephone number.
Yeah,
it's again, it's not really the greatest. Typically, if you really want to go in and be secure, Session is one that comes to mind. There's others too. And there's some that even give you, as you mentioned, ability to communicate near field with other people without even internet connectivity. And that, so with that, it's impossible to determine who's sending what and what is being sent. So right. There are better programs out there than Telegram and Signal, but yeah, they are good examples though. Eventually they could be rubbed off the Play Store and App Store altogether. So 10 years, I can see it getting rubbed off even long before that.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk about Facebook and their fact-checking program. And it would appear some activists out there, they've been able to hijack Facebook's fact-checking program. And for those wondering what it is, well, the fact-checking program is a collaboration between Facebook and third-party fact-checking organizations to identify and label false news and misleading information on Facebook. The program was launched a long time ago, December 2016, and this was in response about the spread of information on the platform. And you know what happened? Well, it looks like there's some abuse and a censorship about legitimate viewpoints as a result of all this. It just went basically from one extreme to the other. And so one example of censoring legitimate viewpoints is the case with the website Breitbart News. And Breitbart is a conservative news website that has been accused of spreading misinformation. And in 2018, Facebook surprisingly added Breitbart to the list of fact-checking websites. However, many of the fact checks that were conducted by Breitbart were biased and inaccurate, according to those people. This led to accusations that Facebook was censoring conservative viewpoints. So, duh. And another example of activists hijacking Facebook's fact-checking program is the case of the website Natural News. Natural News is a website that promotes alternate health remedies. And in 2019, Facebook added Natural News to its list of fact-checking websites. However, the many fact checks that were conducted by Natural News was also deeply biased and inaccurate. So this led to accusations of Facebook as censoring alternate viewpoints and so forth. But in the end, you have this centralized system over here, and it is Facebook. And they could do whatever they want. They have the ability to control the narrative, and they will continue to control the narrative. The only option people have is they have to take the information that they read on stuff like Facebook and everywhere else with a grain of salt. They should be able to take in multiple sources of information, different viewpoints on the same topic, and to digest that and to come out with what is hopefully to be the result, the truth in all this. But it's too bad a lot of people are relying and continue to rely on stuff like Facebook, because they have so much power. In fact, there's even questions of how much power they had with influencing elections. I'm not saying they did. I'm just saying some people are questioning that they may have. So given that, if there's people questioning that and something as sacred as elections, that they're able to alter the results, that's a lot of power they have. And they can easily, just depending on who's in power, who's donating what, who's lobbying who, and who's sitting on the board, well, the direction of the message could change. And man, I just look at this and I just wonder, why are people still using this product? But you know what? I guess the marketplace is still a very active thing for people to sell their crap, their goods, whatever you want to call it. But still, people also go on the other part of Facebook, but not just that, Instagram as well. And is there something else that Facebook uses? Sorry, that Facebook has, Meta has, Facebook. Yep. Oh, sorry.
WhatsApp.
Oh, that's, we talked about the app services just a second ago, and I'll just briefly talk about that. WhatsApp is the worst. Do not use that one if you're trying to send any secure information. So there you go. Everything Facebook/Meta is garbage.
Yeah, no doubt. I don't have a lot to add to this because we've talked about it kind of ad infinitum at this point. But I just, the thing that I will mention is that we're seeing now an environment for news where you basically can't trust any quote unquote reputable news source, right? Here in Canada, the big three or big four newspapers, you can't trust them. You're better off reading something like Western Standard, or, you know, as much as it probably will upset some people, I even read some Epoch Times stories, and I, you know, with a critical eye, I find myself agreeing generally that generally that the reporting is pretty sound. I can go and confirm some of the things that are mentioned in the story on Twitter or other places. And then, of course, Twitter is a decent place to find news if you can curate your feed in a way that makes sense. Noster, I'm sure, does a similarly quality job if you have a curated feed. To your point about who's using Facebook, I would love to see the demographics for the blue app on Facebook, the actual like Facebook app. I don't think there's anyone under 30 using that app for anything other than marketplace and memes. But there was a time, Len, you know, in the sort of mid 2010s where a lot of people my age were, you know, what was I, 20, 25, 26 in the mid 2010s, I guess. Jeez, I don't even know now, but. You know, I was on Facebook every day, just kicking it, talking to people, liking comments, poking, you know, flirting with chicks, whatever. And, you know, I remember at that time, that was around the year or 2 year stretch where everything on Facebook became overtly political and Facebook started to censor and fact check and do all these things. And they weren't the only ones, but they were the thing that Facebook got right is that they always had a reason and a rationale, right? But there was a lot of other companies, apps doing something similar and not having to report on why or how or the mechanism through which they decided something was factual or incorrect or whatever. And those companies really just cruised on Facebook, taking the bullets for them. And they're all still doing it. And no one talks about this. Do you think the National Post and Globe and Mail and whatever don't do stuff like, quote unquote, moderate their comment section for opinions they disagree with? Go look at the comments under CBC stories. Go look at the comments under Globe or Post stories, CTV, City TV here in the GTA. You're going to find very often that the top comments all the time, the ones that are fed to you by an algorithm, not the old way where the best performing comments vis-a-vis voting made it to the top, the ones that are fed to you, the ones that agree with the story more often than not. And that could be, you know, just viewership and readership bias, but I would suggest to you that that is too simple an explanation when everything else points to malice when it comes to assigning disinformation tags to commentary and stories.
Disinformation, that's the topic of the next story altogether. And so an Australian author by the name of Graham Young, he was talking about how much, well, these governments around the world can use these to control people out there. So governments are using the concept of what they've been deeming misinformation and disinformation. And this has been commonly used over and over again as a way to suppress any judgment, any kind of thoughts against the narrative. And Young was questioning the definitions of these terms and the truth, how it's determined. So if you look at this, there's a gray area. There's no way to determine definitively what is disinformation or misinformation. It really is just a stance of where you stand on. And if you believe somebody is telling you something that is against what you think it is, you could easily scream bloody murder, or in this case, disinformation, and just say, look, I'm going to discredit you. And if you do this enough, if enough people say this, unfortunately, it could gain steam and it could pick up enough steam out there and it could stop the original message. And so there's out there, we have the UK's online safety bill, Canada's laws, and the US Disinformation Governance Board, that is all highlighted here as potential things that they're going to be dealing with disinformation and misinformation. So I'm looking at this, and again, there's the nanny state. We've been hearing about this, and we've been seeing this quite often in the past years, especially since March 2020. And this is something that it could be really, really scary, depending on how much overreach there is by the powers that be. They can stifle any thought, any message, anything that you say, and they could do it just with using those words, disinformation or misinformation. But what's the truth behind it? What is the reality of it? There could be zero basis, zero founding, zero nothing, but yet they could use that. And with media control, with funding of the newspaper, with funding of TV, radio, you could easily control messages. And this is another one of disinformation that is just prevalent. And it's going to get worse moving forward, considering how much is at stake and how much information needs to be kept secret. But also another thing is, because we live in this open society where information is freely available on Twitter or X or anywhere else, it's harder to control everything. So if somebody posts a video about something that, well, maybe destroying an image that the government wants to portray, they have to work extra hard to try to stifle that message and to suppress it, because there's going to be so much information out there. And one thing X does really well is now there's the reader feedback. I forget what the name is, but if you post something,
notes.
Sorry?
Community notes.
Community notes. That's, I have to give them credit for that. That with that, you can potentially undermine somebody providing some shitty information from the get-go. And it's been done time and time again. I don't know how they vet this, but for the most part, I find the community notes, the reader notes, they're spot on. I don't know how it's done. I have to give them credit for that. But that's one way to fight all this disinformation and misinformation fight or attack that's being done by governments.
The community notes thing is incredible. I'm a community notes rater. I can't write them, but I can rate them. And I'll tell you that the way it tells you when a rating you gave is on the winning side of the outcome for that community note, it increases the weight that your ratings get going forward. So you just have this kind of the best, most accurate, I say accurate, but the winning raters are weighted more heavily. I don't know if you can hear a difference even between when I say rated and weighted. It feels like my nose is.
No, I hear it.
Okay. But so the thing is that those notes, to your point, oftentimes they really do a good job not only explaining why something is wrong, but you can see in the notes too, like links to sources and all kinds of other stuff. It's great. It's great content. It's great for Twitter, and it's great for people who are looking for accurate information. Joe Biden in the White House get bodied by community notes all the time. Like he leaves in a casket over and over and over again with these dumb comments on Bidenomics and all this other stuff. Like he does, he gets completely crushed. And like, it's good because I think people, even if you're politically aligned with Party A or Party B, and it's not just the liberal parties in the modern democracy that are, you know, spinning the truth. Excuse me. It's also the parties on the right. And I think that no matter where you come down, you read the notes and you get some more context and you add that to your kind of arsenal of determining whether or not you should trust this person, this source, this party, this political spin going forward. And you start to look at things through a critical eye. That's what we want. I don't want to tell somebody they're wrong all the time. I want them to look at things more critically and explain, okay, is this wrong? Is it just out of context? Or is this something that is correct and I should, you know, dig a little deeper into this and help spread this message in a way that makes sense for me? These are important things. Now, the disinformation, you know, with political leanings in the background, as you mentioned, I think political support, certainly here in Canada, you know, whether you agree or disagree or think that it's, you know, a perverse, that might even be too strong a word, but a sort of a perverse mechanism for funding news corporations. The federal government funds the big news corporations here. None of them are profitable. And so that creates an environment where you have moral hazard. And when you have moral hazard, people need to be skeptical. the thing I think I dislike the most about this whole thing with governments and politics and news organizations is that news organizations, you know, cry foul when anyone accuses them of existing in an environment where moral hazard is possible. How can that be? You would never cry foul if, you know, government was, I don't know, like, let's say the Toronto Raptors were supported heavily by the Canadian government vis-a-vis like that tax money paying star players. And every year the Toronto Raptors went over the NBA salary cap and the government just paid for it. They printed the Canadian dollars. They covered the difference. You would accuse the government of playing favorites with the Raptors. And the NBA naturally would be like, hey, we don't want you to do this. The government would never go, oh my goodness, how dare you? I can't believe that you're accusing me of potentially, you know, being slanted toward a team that I'm funding. And the team that I'm funding, of course, they're not slanted towards me. The quote we just had last week, I closed the email here, but about if you're robbing
Paul.
Yeah, if you're robbing Paul to, or if you're robbing Peter to pay Paul, you can always count on Paul's support. Well, what do we see here? This is a great example of that, right? You know, the news orgs are taking money from governments around the world naturally, you know, especially Len, in an environment where jobs are getting harder and harder to come by in those industries, and the economics of news at scale is becoming tighter and tighter for those organizations. Of course, you're going to keep supporting the hand that feeds you. Why would you do anything otherwise? I don't think that there's a way out of this now for those news organizations, quite honestly. And I expect that this is going to continue and probably get worse in the years to come. Now, here's a question for you. If you had to pick whether or not, what do you think stops first? Assuming we get a conservative government here in 2 years, which I believe we will. I think everyone thinks we probably will. Do you think that the Toronto Star, Nat Post, Globe stop taking government money, or do you think they cease to exist? What do you think is going to happen first? Oh, or will it happen together, I guess? Maybe I'm not even phrasing that right. Like I can't think of a world where they stop taking the government money, either because they put up a stand, right? You can imagine a world where Bruce Arthur, my favorite Toronto Star Arthur or Toronto Star author, writes a piece when Polyev wins about how he's a Nazi or something, you know, something insane. And then the Torstar editorial board, you know, oh, we're no longer going to take the subsidy. We're going to count on our readers for support. And then they go bankrupt. Like, I can imagine a world where that happens, honestly. Or do you think that they'll just keep taking the money from the government and the government won't stop funding them and they'll just switch their stripe? Maybe that's the better question. Suddenly conservative causes will become more favorable in the editorial room. See, no, I can't imagine that second one. But then
yeah,
again,
nor can I.
They've proven themselves to be shameless and sort of without a paddle, you know, a sail in the wind, as it were, for the last 5 years. What would change, really? If they needed the money, why would they not just change the stripe?
You know what I suspect is going to happen? It's been happening for the last, you know, century or so. It'll be amalgamation and companies are going to disappear because they just can't make it, like the Toronto Telegram they used to have. I think that used to be around. Like there used to be more papers that were available here. Just because they couldn't cut it, they left the market and they left it for other people. And you're going to probably have that going forward. The Toronto Star, I mean, they could easily disappear. If they're not making money, why could they continually do business?
None of these guys are making money. They're all taking the bulk of their, you know, quote unquote income, again, wrong word, from government subsidy, all of them.
CTV and the Globe are the ones that have the biggest pockets, though, deepest pockets.
Maybe, but you remember CBC put out that graphic when Polyev accused them of taking money from the government? They tried to break up the bar graph, like change the y-axis. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like these people, they don't – I'm going to bite my tongue here. I will just say that you have to be skeptical when you're talking about whether or not these companies are honest with you and ask yourself why. And ask yourself why something is disinformation over and over and over again. Find the similarities, the threads in between those items that are quote unquote disinformation. And dig, man, think about these things when you're deciding what's true and what's not and the actions you should take as a citizen, right? And what it means to be informed as a citizen. It's not necessarily just reading the CBC and making a decision. There's other stuff out there that's more unbiased than these big news orgs are.
Let's talk about taking action. And because Meta, the company that is the parent company of Facebook and Instagram, they said they've taken down two large influential operations run by China and Russia. And the Chinese operation was the largest covert online influence operation Meta has ever disrupted, the company said. The Chinese operation was aimed at sowing discord in the United States and other Western countries. It was used a network of fake accounts to post divisive content on social media, such as criticism of the U.S. government and its allies. The operation also tried to manipulate public opinion on issues such as COVID-19 pandemic and the war in Ukraine. The Russian operation, too, was also aimed at supporting the Russian government's narrative about the war in Ukraine. It used a network of fake accounts to post pro-Russian content on social media, such as denials of Russian war crimes and claims that the West was responsible for the conflict. The operation also tried to sow discord amongst Western countries by promoting conspiracy theories and misinformation. So Meta said they've taken down thousands of fake accounts and pages connected to the two operations, and it said it blocked more than 2,000 domains from being shared on Facebook and Instagram. And Meta says that this comes as social media companies are under increased scrutiny for the role that they have in spreading disinformation. And so here's another one where Meta, I'm not sure who gave him the direction here, if they did it on their own or somebody told them to do this. They decided to put the kibosh to these two very large operations that were, well, it looks like some of it may be advantageous for Western nations, but others, it seems to me that it may be hiding what could be potentially the truth, because we're getting one side an argument, from what I could tell. I could be wrong when it comes to the war in Ukraine. And it's obviously the Russian offensive isn't something we should be cheering or anything, but there is two sides to every story. And unfortunately, we're not getting both sides here. I'd like to hear everything that's been going on, all the war crimes that are happening, all the atrocities and everything along those lines, all the wins, all the losses, but we don't seem to be getting it. And with this recent initiative by Meta, we have lost another operation that could potentially give us this information. But if they're out there to create divisiveness in the Western nations, it may be a better thing that they're now no longer operational and now blocked from Meta. But I don't know, man. I look at this, I see some good, some bad, a lot of gray. And I don't know. I don't know who to trust, who to be cheering for, and who to hate. There's just so much information here, a lot of gobbledygook, and too much sometimes for me to actually digest and to parse. But I want to hear your thoughts.
Another example of incomplete accounting for something that's major, and really there's no reason why we shouldn't have complete accounting on this. I'm not suggesting that there's not fog of war when there's a conflict, certainly not a hot conflict involving Russia. But this idea that, you know, Facebook, Meta, whatever, is taking down opposition accounts that are, quote unquote, trying to influence or spin the truth. You know, guys, I got bad news. The modern West are some of the most propagandized citizens on the planet ever to live. If you think that Ukraine is winning the war with Russia, you've been propagandized. If you think that inflation is a phenomenon that's going to be under control anytime soon, you've been propagandized. If you think the US dollar is sound, you've been propagandized. If you think the Federal Reserve is federal or has any reserves, you've been propagandized. You know, you could go on and on down this list. Look at even something as simple as you mentioned earlier, Natural News, this alternative news site that talks about health, you know, in maybe vis-a-vis avenues that are off the beaten path, let's say. Len, they, you know, that's deemed to be misinformation or not part of a fact-checking team after some time. But certainly, if you go through Facebook's stories and recommended stories, I guarantee you could find stuff funded by pharma, funded by McDonald's, funded by Coke, funded by Mars, funded by you name it, right? Procter & Gamble, GE, whatever, or GM, I should say. And so I just, when people say that they're, you know, oh, we're taking down accounts that are propagandizing and spinning the truth. Like, what do you think happens here? You think you're immune to this? The problem is you're the fish in water, right? You don't know what water is when someone asks you about it because it's how you live. It's how you exist. It's everywhere for you. And, you know, if you want an idea of how far things have fallen and how much information is kept from you now, I always like to talk about the History Channel. I think that's a really good example. People always say that if you don't know anything about history, you're doomed to repeat it. I'm not sure if that's 100% true, but certainly history rhymes if it doesn't repeat. And it's important to know the context in which you find yourself today when it comes to things like conflict, war, economics, markets, politics, general statecraft and citizenhood, things of this nature. There's a lot of stuff that's happened in the last 2,000 years. It's very important to where we find ourselves today. History Channel used to run a lot of the time stuff that was actually important and historical stuff about ancient civilizations, about Egyptian pharaohs, about British monarchs, about all these different things. And people used to watch that and demand it and consume it. And there was a market for these things. Now, if you turn on the History Channel, what do you see? Pawn Stars, Ice Road Truckers, reality TV shows, all kinds of nonsense that doesn't inform you. In fact, it does the opposite. It numbs your brain after a day of work where you probably didn't do anything valuable or stimulating or educational. And then you go to sleep and do it again the next day. And before you know it, it's been 20 years and you don't have any context where you are because you spent the last 20 years watching, you know, middle-aged women get drunk and yell at each other on party buses in between episodes of Pawn Stars instead of reading or understanding history. And when you have that problem, you lose grasp on the causes and effects of past events. And when I think about propaganda, that's an underreported on part of the propagandization. I don't know if that's a word, propagandization of an entire modern population. There's just nowhere for you to go to find these things that's not high friction anymore. You go to Google, as we mentioned many times, the stories you get are selective. They're pre-approved and may not give you the whole story. When you go to Meta, same thing. If you want to get something in your cable package that might actually help you learn, it's like, you know, an extra $8 or $12 a month. Everywhere you look, it's difficult to find information that matters and easy to get stuff that will numb you until the day you die. That's where we are. And so you can say what you want about Russia putting up bot farms or spoofing New York Times for stories or whatever, but we got to look in the mirror here a little bit in the West before we start pointing fingers at our adversaries abroad.
You know, that something to consider too is nowadays, and you're right, I cut the cord a long time ago, so I can't speak on how this History Channel has gone by the wayside. But in terms of how information can be obtained, there's lots of abilities that you could do that. There's so many avenues you could pursue. 25 years ago and before that, there was not this didn't exist. If you wanted to learn about what was really going on, it was impossible to do so. You're only limited to the people you talk to by telephone or by whatever. 25 years ago, it was a very different time. And even before that, any time before that was kind of in the same vein. So now you have this ability to communicate with people, like-minded people that are sharing information freely and available on all these different platforms. And people, if they choose not to do it, if they choose not to educate themselves, they're going to be in the same, we have the same blinders that people had 25, 30 years ago where they had no ability to get this information. It's just now people do have the ability, but they choose not to exercise it. And they would rather numb themselves to death in one way or shape or another by watching TV or partaking in a bottle or a hit on something or anything like that.
Yeah.
But you know what? That's also a product of how difficult it is to live today. I'm not trying to give them a pass because let's be honest, anybody could break out of this, but I would say that getting by now is probably the most difficult it has in the past 30, 40, 50, for sure. 50 years. And especially for young folks, they have it really difficult. So I don't know. I don't want to paint this in a negative light, but there's ways to get information, but it's hard to encourage people to do that and to force them to go down that path just because there's so many things out there that is just driving them down to grinding them to a pulp. Life itself is tough, but people could fight against it. I'm sure of it. Like I have faith in a lot of people.
Yeah. But, we'll figure it out. We'll tough it out. That's it for today. Great episode, buddy. That was Access of Easy. As always, don't forget, sign up for the newsletter, subscribe to the podcast, the YouTube channel. We're here every week. We record Thursday nights. Everything comes out Friday for your listening, viewing, reading pleasure. And I guess that's it. Len, until next time, take care of yourselves, everybody.
Yeah, take care.